Well, I think we're about ready to get started.
Sounds good.
This evening, I have a unique pleasure. I get to introduce someone I consider a mentor of mine in the hypnosis world. As those were on when we were strolling down memory lane there, George Bien is the reason I first went to a hypnosis conference. I was mostly in the NLP world at that point. That was 1988 or something like that. And he was doing a firewalk at the National Guild of Hypnotists, and I went out to do the firewalk on a Thursday, and of course I said, well, if I'm going, I might as well stay for the conference. And I stayed for the conference, and George was gracious enough to spend some time with me and talk, and I sat through his seminars there, and of course, you know, he was dynamic and energetic and engaging, and so
I will be right there.
Kept going, and so it was a wonderful experience. And like I said, he's a mentor of mine, and so I get the pleasure of introducing him. He's been in the field for, let's just say, a long time, because like we just figured out, we've known each other for 20 years, and he's one of the people that actually teaches people how to do this. He doesn't just lecture about it and you know, talk about it. He gives people usable skills. And so I'd like to ask everyone, as we get ready to get started, if you want to go ahead and hit star.
I cannot.
Star.
Six.
So star two. So everyone mute their own lines. I'll do it that way. So then later on, when we ask you to chip in, you hit star three, and then you can come in. And so again, it's my pleasure to introduce someone I consider a pioneer in the field. He's also one of the few people that has actually won a bunch of awards from hypnosis organizations, but many hypnosis organizations, not just one. So the awards he's gotten aren't just the self-serving awards, because they're basically given by the, you know, your own organization. So he's a mentor of mine, someone I consider probably one of the top three hypnotists in the world. So I'd like to welcome George.
Wow. That's certainly very humbling, Will. Thank you so much, especially coming from somebody of your caliber who I've respected and admired, of course, for the last 20 years also, since the time we met. So it's a pleasure to be here. And I'm open for questions. I'm open for talking. I'm open for learning, too. So let's rock and roll.
As we put out in the blast, you know, you're a true international trainer, as you know, you've been all over the world training, and in fact, you know, we both, and again, it's because of George, I got to go to Malaysia for the first time. A guy that he was doing a training there and introduced me to the promoter there. So George has taught all over the world hypnosis, NLP, presentation skills. I know that went over very well in Malaysia. So I thought we'd talk about presentation skills, because it's one thing to be good at what you do. It's another thing to be able to teach people to do it and to engage them as you're teaching them. We can all think back to the those people who've been to university, as they say in Europe, or college, as we say here. We can all think of sitting in a classroom where the teacher is, you could tell they're very knowledgeable, but they speak like this, and they talk about being motivated and excited, and they're hypnotists without even trying. So I'd like to get pick George's brain on motivating others, if that's okay.
Well, that sounds great, Will. You know, one of my favorite quotes is a quote by Daniel Webster, where he said, if all my possessions were taken from me, with one exception, I would choose to keep the power of speech, for by it I would soon regain all the rest. Now, that's an amazing quote, and that's the importance of power of speech. And so many are called, but few are willing to get up at times. And you mentioned how well the seminars did go over in Malaysia, and also Indonesia and Singapore, the speaking seminars. And one of the reasons is that people understand the value of this. And yet what's extraordinary is that so many people have an unwillingness to be up there and be themselves. The challenge for most people, I find, is that they try to be somebody else when they're in front of an audience. And they're looking to impress a group rather than to express what's going on for them. And maybe because I've been in the field so many years already, it's not that I don't care, because of course I care. I care very much. And I want to be liked like everybody else wants to be liked. As a matter of fact, I'd love to be loved. At the same time, I know that I can survive if I don't get that response. And I think one of the challenges that people have when they go up there is that they are so concerned about reflective appraisal. And that is basically what other people think of themselves, and they develop an image of themselves based on what they feel other people view them as. And there's a saying, I forgot who the people were, Blindberg, Loopling, I believe, the two people, psychologists, they said, I am not what I think I am, I'm not what you think I am, I am what I think you think I am. Meaning that people's value that they've placed on themselves over years is based on what their perception was of how people thought of them, which may have been totally wrong. And this is what they bring with them when they come to the classroom, either as a student or especially as a trainer. See, people also have to realize that there's a difference between speaking and between training, because a presenter is audience-oriented, where a speaker is speaker-oriented. So you can be motivating, but it's not a motivational speech. You can be engaging, but it's not about engaging yourself as much as it is engaging the group. And the level of comfort in a room is directly in proportion with the level of comfort the person in front of the room exudes. So, I mean, perhaps it's because of the years I've been in this field, or it could be just the fact that the skills I've developed, whatever it may be. I'm not going to flatter myself with this, of course, but the thing is that whenever I face a group, it's as though I'm facing a group of people who are in my living room, and they're literally friends of mine, and that's how I think of the group. And I understand that each one of them has their own insecurities, their own fears, their own concerns, just as I do. So if somebody's up in front of a room initially, what they have to do is realize that these are people in front of them rather than somebody who's looking to basically critique them.
Right. Well, and as we all know, the biggest fear in the world is public speaking.
Absolutely.
You know, I think death is number four, you know.
Number four, some say number six, but here's the deal. What's interesting is that how many people die every year, at least in the United States, from car accidents? I know it used to be 50,000, maybe it's like 300,000 now, I don't know what it is. But yet, I have never heard of a person dying while public speaking. So you're safer in there, in front of the room, than you are in an automobile.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
The only thing that's ever died on stage is my career.
You will, of course. I mean, you've spoken around the world also, and I'm sure you have found the same thing, whether you're speaking to a group in India, a group in China, a group in Indonesia, a group in Malaysia, a group in Singapore, wherever, or a group in the United States or in Europe. There are people in front of you, and people are people with the same kind of wants, desires, hopes, and dreams. And I believe that when people who are doing any sort of training, when they realize that and really come to terms with that, they're able to feel more comfortable in front of virtually any group.
Right. I know I used to go by that rule that, you know, since most people have a fear of speaking, if you step up in front of a group, you're automatically given some front of the room and doing what most people are afraid to do. And even other speakers, those people that speak for a living and have spoken and trained like yourself or myself, if I'm at a conference or anywhere and someone gives up the talk, they have all my respect in the world just because I know how hard it is to do.
Oh, absolutely, and I feel the same way. And let's put it this way. If we go hear a speaker speak, Will, and this is pretty much for everybody who's ever heard, let's say, a motivational speech, we've pretty much heard what we've heard there before. Now, maybe presented in a different style. It might be more dynamic, maybe more engaging. Maybe it's you get a better understanding of it, whatever it may be. But it's really the delivery and the person's own ability to make him or herself vulnerable, to make themselves human. That's what catches my attention about these speakers. Because I know what they're going through. I mean, you know, people say we're nervous up there. Well, of course you're nervous, because what is the word nervous? The word nervous simply means an excitation of the nervous system. So I want to be nervous up there. I want to be excited. Now, it's not a question of being afraid, but it's a question of an excitation of the nervous system. Without that, a speaker would be very bland and very boring. So certainly I'm expecting a speaker up there to have that excitation of that nervous system. I'd expect them to move a little closer towards me or the group or the audience. I expect them to have certain inflections in their voice to change, modify, alter, adjust as words are reflected from them.
Yeah. And you know
that
what?
That all deals with credibility.
Oh, yeah. And I know, like, I was giving a talk at a conference and the NGH in big room, one of the big rooms, and there's overflow and all that. And then afterwards, I was telling somebody how nervous I was when they came back to my booth. And they're like, I can't believe you were nervous. And I said the same thing you did, because I know you're a musician, and as you know, I was trained as an actor. And used to do, and well, I haven't for a couple of years, but used to do community theater. And I've always heard said by actors and all performers is that, you know, you never want to lose, as you said, that little bit of excitement before you go on. Make sure you know your lines. Make sure you know what you're going to present. Make sure you know how to get there and all those good things, because I'm always nervous if I'm not nervous.
Yeah, well, there you go. That's it. Because if you're not, I mean, if you don't have that excitation of that nervous system, you're going to probably give a very bland performance. So you need that. And I think if you speak to any speaker, any presenter, if they're really honest, they will tell you that they feel that tinge of movement within them. You know, like they say, you know, you feel butterflies, have them fly in formation, you know, that old saying. And that's really what it is. And so, you know, I want that tinge. I draw on it. I pull on it. And if I see anybody in the audience who I feel perhaps has any sort of energy that they're pushing out towards me, whether it be hostile or whether it be very positive, I draw on it and pull it in so I can make my presentation perhaps even more dynamic.
Yeah, well, and in fact, I remember you saying at a conference, at one of the first conferences I was at, and then you repeated it when we were sitting at a conference in Chicago, you and I and Dwight Damon. We sat at after a banquet, remember, you don't remember, we sat and talked. And you repeated it then, is that how many Tony Robbins or Zig Ziglar or whatever, depending on, you know, what kind of training they're doing. And I've heard you say and other people say, but you said it the best, where it's like the world doesn't need another Tony Robbins.
Mm-hmm.
Tony Robbins is Tony Robbins. The world needs another you. Because whatever your skills are gonna amplify whatever it is that you're teaching, training, and speaking about.
Yeah, that is so true what you're saying. People have to bring as much of themselves, because each one of us is so unique with our own basic challenges, our own concerns, yet at the same time, a personal history. And much of that, as personal as it is, people can relate to. And if they can relate to you, well, then they can understand you. And if they understand you, they realize that you are like them, although you may be in a position, perhaps, that they would like to be in if they want to be a speaker, perhaps, or a trainer. Yet at the same time, there's a commonality that both of you share. And if you do that and you engage that, well, the element of rapport, of course, and how quickly you can gain that with an audience, how you can take a group that's so diverse, because I do the trainer, of course, for IACT, for the Master Trainer Program for hypnosis trainers. And in that class, I get people from China, we had one from Singapore, we had somebody from New Zealand, Canada, China, England, and such a diverse group. And to have a group like that within at least a very short time feel comfortable with themselves and feel comfortable enough to basically share their own vulnerabilities. Now, that is what it's all about when you're presenting, to get a group to feel safe with you.
Yes, because especially with what we're doing, it's speaking about hypnosis and teaching hypnosis and NLP, safety is paramount, because that's when people will open up and not just learn it, but experiment with it.
Absolutely. And the more you get them to open up, more the presentation becomes an interaction. And then you know what? There's a flow created. And the flow comes from you and the group, and you're going back and forth. Yet what's imperative that any speaker and any trainer, any presenter has to understand is that it's still their room. That's very important. Because you can be very nice, and of course you can have people engage, but you have to know when to stop. Perhaps questions because of time restrictions. You have to also know when if somebody's a bit challenging because of their own challenges and their own difficulties and their own perhaps sometimes either maybe their question wasn't answered in the way they wish it were answered, or perhaps could even be a self-esteem issue where they need some attention. You have to know how to work with that, with never embarrassing an individual. So if there's ever a joke to be made, I know in my case, the joke is always on me first. I make fun of myself very much in trainings, and the fun I make is true truisms. I don't make stories up about that. It's true. If I did something stupid, I tell the group about it. And if I say, well, listen, I fell on my face when I did this, I don't have a problem telling them that. Because, again, it's true. So that, I think, the honesty thing is very, very important. So you don't get up there and try to impress this group at all. You get up there, you tell this group who you are. You let them feel who you are. Let them feel not only your energy, but especially your heart. Because you could be dynamic, wave your hands around, jump around a room, and you look like a total idiot. Because it's not just about being powerful. It's about having a difference so they can see where there's the power, yet at the same time the subtlety. Because not everybody screams every second in their lives. There are moments when they whisper. There are moments when they get in touch with their inner self at such a degree where it's so personal. That at the same time they can get on and really roar. And to be able to have that difference and have that available to you at any moment congruently.
Wow. Yeah, great. And that'll lead into, you know, how important is it in little ways that you found to get totally present and on target with what you want to accomplish in your talk and how you break a big talk down into little talks.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is one of the key issues because if you don't know where you're going with every presentation, whatever it may be, some sort of action, be it to move toward a certain direction, means to feel better about themselves, be it to perhaps get a better self-esteem, a better self-image, or even to buy a product, whatever it may be. But always with the goal, and an honest goal, of something that's of value to them. So to get present, at least for me, what I do is I sort of get myself lost. I get lost in the presentation. Not that I don't know where I'm going, and not that I cannot edit in an instant if I feel I'm moving off target for a moment. But the thing is, to still get lost in a presentation, as people call it, the flow. And to, if you see, once, there's a certain feeling that athletes have, there's a certain feeling that musicians have, that presenters have, that anybody has. You could be speaking with someone, you could be making love with someone, I mean, whatever it may be, where their thought is absent. In other words, you're not really thinking and evaluating yourself. You're going out of third person, and you're going basically into first, and at times even second person. So as long as you can maintain that, now it's not that thoughts won't come into your mind. It's not that I never have a critical thought in my mind. Of course it happens at times. Say, George, how could you have said something so stupid? I mean, that can happen, and it does happen. And the thing is to let that go as quickly as possible. And to be more audience-oriented, and when you're more audience-oriented, you're less yourself-oriented. So all the fears, the concerns, all the worries about whether I'm going to remember the material, I remember I used to over-prepare. Now, I honestly never prepare, which is probably a bad thing to tell people, but I really don't. My wife's the kind of person, Elena, who will write everything out. She'll, these are the items I'm going to cover today in this talk or in this presentation. Then I'll do the subheadings, and I'm going to do this and do that. I don't do that. And it may be good or not, it may be bad, but it seems to work for me. But I have enough faith, at least in the Almighty or whatever it may be, to allow something to work through me in a way where I can let go of evaluation and just let the words flow through me. And that happens when you're working therapeutically with someone, whether you're doing a presentation or whether you're just talking with a friend, either on the phone or in person.
Right. Well, if you're,
if you're,
as you said, I know when you're engaged with the audience, just like if you're engaged with somebody, you're not thinking about what you're going to say next. You're just in the moment.
Absolutely. And you have to realize that people have short attention spans today. I mean, attention spans are getting shorter and shorter. I don't know about you, but I'm definitely attentively deficit. I get bored so quickly, and people get bored so quickly. So we have to know that. We have to realize that. So with your presentation, it's not the same as public speaking. Like I said, this is audience-oriented, and you're there to persuade. But you need to, number one, you've got to get some attention getting. You got to get. It's got to be meaningful. It's got to be memorable. And of course, your presentation has to be activating. And the more audience conscious, and the more you develop a concern and care for the audience, the better you can communicate with your voice and your movements with them. Because all you're doing is speaking honestly. You know, things that turn people off. I mean, you don't want to get up there with a know-it-all attitude. My gosh. I mean, that's something that if I ever came across that way, it'd be very stupid because, first of all, there are many people in the audience, and I realize this, who know a lot more than I do about many things. So I understand that. And, you know, of course, don't talk down to them. Don't use terminology that perhaps they aren't familiar with, things like that. You got to watch your repetition of movements, but yet they'll tell you. You take these speaking courses, and they'll say, don't put your hands in your pockets. Some of the greatest people and speaking people in the world, the greatest speakers on the planet, you put their hands in their pockets. If that's comfortable for you, then you do it. Maybe one hand so you could use the other one for at least for some gestures. So
right.
It's not about following rules specifically. I mean, you don't want to use profanity, of course, and things like that. You don't play with a pencil or a mic cord. I mean, look, this is common sense. But other than that, arrogance, who is that? Lily Walters. Lily Walters of the Walters Speakers Bureau said, arrogance is a disease that makes you an ugly speaker.
Mm.
So you come across with being humble and humility because I would hope that that's who you are.
Right. I think it was Dottie Walters who said one of the best things a trainer speaker can say is, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
If someone asks a question
you
don't know, just it's...
And that was a tough one for me for a long time to be able to actually say, I don't know, and I'll find out for you. I can get back to you. But you know what? Now, if I don't know, I don't try to fake it. If I don't know, I don't know.
Yeah.
And I think that takes a little confidence to do that. But it's honest. You know?
Yeah. And which lead to a great question many of us have. Getting ready to give a talk or start your training. How do you leave the concerns of the day behind?
Well, first of all, if you're in the moment, you're not going to have concerns of the day that will be affecting you at any given moment. The thing is to stay in the moment is the way you leave concerns of the day behind. You see, I remember a situation, this was a long time ago, somebody I was dating, and I was working as a musician, we're working in a nightclub, and we just had this massive argument because she was drinking a lot and she was almost falling on the major argument. This is many years ago. And so we went back on the stage and she was singing and she gave a performance that was extraordinary, extraordinary. And we got off the stage and she's looking at me, by the way, smiling and we'd be getting into it and I'm playing my guitar and she's like smiling away. I'm smiling at her. I said, wow, this is great. You know, she's over the whole thing. So I said, that was fantastic. And she said some words I'd rather not repeat to me and walked away. And I said, oh, my God. I said, she was still upset and angry, but you never would have known it because she left any concerns that she had wherever they were, in the car where we were having the argument. So that's what we have to do when we're up there. When something else takes over and you allow it to take over, how many times you can close your eyes and lose yourself in something? Many times. How many times you could be in a conversation with an individual and lose yourself in the conversation? How many times can you be taken up with someone perhaps who is very charismatic or very attractive or very knowledgeable and lose yourself in that individual? Or in a movie or in an audio tape that you're listening to or in a book that you're reading? The same thing that happens on the stage, to literally lose yourself in the moment.
Oh, yeah, and I know I can share something. I remember... I was doing an NLP training and at one of the conferences and you were there and you were in and out of the training, but you were at the conference obviously, and something happened at home and there was some challenges at home and a very close relative ended up in the hospital and I didn't know if I'd have to leave. And I remember, you probably don't remember this, but I asked you that if I had to leave, would you finish or, you know, take over my training? And you said, oh, you know, we talked for a moment. And I said, well, I won't know till, you know, after one of the breaks. And then, of course, it ended up I didn't have to leave. But at the end of the training, some of the people found out that there was that was going on in my life. And they're like, well, how did you continue the training? And I said, well, kind of what you just said. Once I got started, once I walked back in the room and we got back into the training, it was in a flow moment kind of thing.
Yeah.
But at every break, I'd run out, call, make sure everything was okay. So I think it's some of that comes back to the old theater thing, and as you as a musician know, the show must go on.
Absolutely. You know, there's a time for everything, and the time right now, the audience deserves your time. And yet I remember reading somewhere, Barbara DeAngelis, the author of Relationships, and she was doing a seminar, of course, about relationships, and she got in front of the class, and she literally sat down and cried. Now, this was secondhand information, so I don't know if it's true, but I had heard this. And the audience came up and consoled her. So there she didn't let it go, yet at the same time, she won the group over with her humility and her willingness to be vulnerable. Now, I don't suggest you do that. But the thing is, if it's timed right, perhaps it can work. I remember I went to a presentation by Les Brown, who's one of my favorite motivational speakers, and I love Les Brown speaking. And he got up there, and he was ready to be dynamic, and I was expecting him to do his thing. You know, if you want anything bad enough to go out and fight for it, work day and night for it, give your time, your peace, and your sleep for it, of all that you dream, I want to go through the whole quote. But the thing is to do his quotes and do all this magnificent stuff and fantastic, and he's up there, and he just doesn't seem like himself. And all of a sudden, he goes on a mic, and he says, people, they told me that I might have prostate cancer. Any suggestions? Well, you know, my heart dropped, and I could see the people's hearts opened up also. Now, it's a little bit different with Les Brown, with somebody who has not received that level of perhaps credibility or fame. But here's the importance of vulnerability. And people realize that you are a human being and you have feelings also. Now, what you did in the training was definitely the perfect thing to do. And what that ex-girlfriend of mine did in that performance was the perfect thing to do in that case. Yet there are times also that that vulnerability does really connect. And it doesn't connect, certainly, if it's used manipulatively. But if it's done honestly and genuinely, it can be effective. Because they don't care how much you know until they know how much you care and are willing to be who you are.
Right. In fact, I heard Kevin Trudeau, the memory guy, now he does the other stuff too,
mm-hmm.
the health care stuff.
But you know, he's a billionaire.
Oh, yeah. And he used to say when he'd be given a talk, he would always purposely mispronounce one or two words.
Mm-hmm.
So someone later on would come up and correct him. And he would do that, he said. Because it like you just said, it opened up his humanity. And especially
when you see somebody
say, oh, you
pronounced,
you know, just word wrong. Yeah, cool.
Yeah. I don't want to hear somebody who's perfect, because perfection, certainly once you can define it, it's no longer perfection. Yet at the same time, if every word is enunciated so perfectly, the person may sound a bit affected, to me at least, and never a mistake because everything is so carefully placed. Now, I wonder if that person folds every bit of his or her underwear the same way that they speak. You know, it shows me a person who may be, the old saying is, anally retentive. So, yeah, trip over words. Yeah, say things and say, I can't believe that came out of my mouth. And say, people, what I really meant to say was this. Be real. Be engaging. Enjoy yourself. And that's important, too, the aspect of enjoying oneself. You know, remember I said that people have these short attention spans. Now, these days, you can turn on the news and basically see what's going on around the whole globe within 60 seconds. So if you're talking for at least 60 seconds, you'd be at least, that'd be at least as exciting as the world news.
That's true, and you know, the attention spans, I think, getting shorter because of the internet and text messaging and everything.
Yeah, I mean, people just, they have so little time, and they have so much time. And what I mean by that is they have so much time to explore and sit on the internet for hours, but yet so little time to stay in one's place unless they are engaged. You know, and any time, I do a speaking workshop also, it's a 3-day workshop. And it's a dynamic program. People get to do things that are really just outrageous. I mean, things they probably wouldn't even think of doing. But I know if they can get through these things, they can get through anything else. But some of the things I ask them to ask themselves when they get up there are like, what part of this experience am I going to discover about myself that I'm totally thrilled with? Who's the first person who's going to smile at me during my talk? You know, or how many ways am I going to discover myself using my eyes, my ears, my feelings more? And here's one. How can I get myself to purr like a cat? That was to get up there and really enjoy and just have that feeling, the purring of the cat. And to get that person to have that kind of mindset when they get up there. And to look at each individual, even momentarily, and say, I wonder what pains, what concerns, what wishes and hopes that maybe never came to fruition for you. I wonder what they were, or what you suffered in your life, or who the last person who rejected you. My gosh, you go up there, you can start crying with your compassion for the audience, so how can you be frightened of them?
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And, you know, this leads into those other areas of, you know, when you're training like that, I know, give away my age a little bit, one of the big thing I've seen change is when we're doing a conference or a multi-day training is no one's ever out of touch anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it used to be because cell phones, you know, 15, 18 years ago, no one had a cell phone. So you'd be doing
right.
a training. Yeah, at the breaks or at lunch, people might run out and make some phone calls. But now it's like, you know, they're constantly in touch. So I'm always reminding myself, I'm competing with everything to keep their attention.
You're competing with Jay Leno, with David Letterman, with Oprah, with Tyra Banks. You're competing with all these people because this is what they're exposed to. You're competing, like you said, with their text messages. You're competing with their messages from their friends. They come back and they may have, and they're call waiting 14 calls. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
They're going to watch the evening news in 60 seconds or half an hour, depends on what they're watching. Or they're going to watch some movie. And I don't know if this is true, but I've heard that there are some places that are actually shortening movies. There's some kind of equipment that can shorten the movie so the person doesn't have to spend an hour and a half watching a whole movie or 2 hours. That's crazy.
Yeah. Well, and that leads into a question of, I know I do it one way, but I'd like to hear how you do it, about reading the mood of the room, which is very important because you can't take them anywhere you want to go if you don't know where they're at the beginning.
No, absolutely. And the thing is, first of all, you definitely scope out the room. I mean, I come in there smiling because, again, I'm excited to be there because these are my friends who have joined me in my living room. And yet you may see where there's certain, think of leaders in groups. The larger the group, the more leaders you will see. And these leaders may not even be aware that they are leaders. What I'm looking for is a shift of an individual that perhaps people around them start shifting similarly once he or she shifts, be it with a movement or some kind of a gesture. So I'm looking for leaders, but if I don't see them immediately, what I'm doing is I'm doing my best to set the energy in the room for them rather than waiting to see what energy they have set for me. I remember when I first went to Singapore in 1997, and, well, that's a while ago, 11 years ago, 1997, and I was teaching there. I was teaching life coaching. I should have gotten in on a coaching thing because I was doing that a long time ago, coaching organizations. But the life coach, I was doing a certification for ICT for life coach. I was doing an NLP certification. No, not an NLP. I was doing a hypnosis certification, life coach, and stress management certification, certified stress management consultant. And when I came in for the hypnosis program, these people, talk about being intimidated, they had books of hypnosis all over their tables. There's a classroom style set up. They had books, I mean, piles of books. And I'm looking at these books in hypnosis and saying, my gosh, they have books there I haven't even read. And these people are going through these books. I said, how am I even going to answer the questions? And I had to literally walk out of the room again and tell myself to shut up. So there was an academic, basically energetic flow in that room. Very academic. And these people were very proper. They would bow. They'd speak. Of course, they were speaking British, which is interesting to see an Asian individual with a beautiful British accent. For me, that was kind of unusual at the time. But speaking perfect English, better English than I was speaking. And here I am, of course, a musician, musician's background. I get down to earth, get real. Let's make things happen. Let's cool. It's cool, baby. Let's get down. And I'm saying, my gosh, this is a group that's so educated and so refined. I said, what am I going to do? Well, what I did is I spoke with them with total reverence, and I spoke in as much as I could in an academic fashion. I mean, I did teach college for 7 years, so I had sort of a background in an academic style. And they went along with this, and they were very respectful. But here's the kick, that within the second day, the promoter came in, and he said, George, what did you do to these people? They were in the hallways throwing each other on the floor, playing around like children. And I said, all I did, Mel, this guy Mel at the time, I said, all I did, Mel, was give them permission to be themselves. Mm. You see, no matter what energy is set and no matter what tone is in the room that you walk in, understand that these are adults. However, they're really children many times in an adult's body. They want to play. They want to have fun. Even that director type who's staunch and saying just the facts and only the facts, if you can help break that down and that barrier, these are the people sometimes that get even the most outrageous and the most ridiculous and do some things that they themselves are surprised that they are doing. To allow them to be their child self, because that really is never lost. It's only suppressed.
Right. And I've seen you train, obviously, and one of the things you bring to the room is that I'm always impressed with is you look like you're having fun. And I try to do that because if the trainer's having fun, like you just said, you just give the people in the room permission to have fun.
Absolutely. You know, they're going to watch for you because you're supposed to give them the lead. They're going to look to see what you're doing. They're going to see your level of comfort, your level of security, your level of confidence. And, you know, sometimes you may have to fake it in order to make it. And certainly, how many times, I mean, I've seen this with people. I say, okay, they lack all this confidence. And I say, how would it be if you had confidence? What would you do? How would you feel? What would you see? Typical NLP stuff. I say, what would you feel? What would you see? What would you hear? How would you say to yourself this? And you see an automatic physiological, get yourself that physical shift, that automatic physiological shift. It's very simple to do if you just simply allow yourself, at least momentarily, to focus on things like that that perhaps are exciting. To make yourself larger than life at that moment, if that's what you need to do. And you look at this group and say, oh my gosh, they're so small. I better be gentle with them. And also to have an emotional bank, an abundance of emotional space. Because they're never going to be magically enthralled with you or your topic if you aren't, like you said. And, you know, even if a person, let's say, who may be listening in, who's concerned about getting in front of groups, and concerned about maybe moving the group emotionally, like when they think about a speaker, what is it that he or she is doing that's allowing that person to get you captivated? What is it about them? You know, how are they pulling your attention in a certain way that perhaps you find delightful, interesting, fascinating? You know, what makes someone easy or something easy to pay attention to? Like simply, what makes a speaker charismatic? And then allow yourself to fall into these things, to move into them, and then to make them part of yourself. You know, what's the old saying, 21 days to a new habit?
Mm-hmm.
So certainly if you fake it till you make it for 21 days, something's going to happen. And what do you surround yourself with? Who motivates the motivators? What do people listen to? If you listen to the evening news all the time, not that I don't, I do at times, but at least I accept now that it's not the truth. So I've learned that much. But yet at the same time, you know, I want to be around people like you, Will, because anytime I speak with you, I get uplifted. Even when we speak about something really serious that may be of concern in the field, right away you say yes, and this, and this, and this, and I say, whoa, you know, Will's right on, and Will's making me feel better. So a person should have a bank of people also around themselves that they can feel inspired by, motivated by, and feel a level of being better than who they even think they are after they speak with this individual.
Yeah, that left me speechless.
And well, I'm out of words too.
Usually don't do that, but when you know, I always tell people that if they want to learn to speak, you know, as a speaker, mm-hmm. We know how to speak, hopefully, that one of the things, it's always fascinating, someone say, oh, I want to be a public speaker, and mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, and I love when somebody tells me they want to be a motivational speaker, because I still haven't figured out quite what a motivational speaker is. I know a lot of trainers, but
yeah.
The ones I know that do a lot of, even the motivational speakers and the trainers, are always going to see other speakers and trainers.
Oh,
they go
yeah.
to conferences, you know, and they practice things. You know, I know I had someone in my class that worked for Tony Robbins, and mm-hmm. they were saying that, you know, to this day, and I don't know if it's true, this was a couple years ago, but they said, you know, that Tony Robbins takes, you know, he takes acting classes, of course, because he wants to be an actor, but he takes acting classes, voice classes, singing classes, dance classes, movement classes. And then he, you know, he videotapes himself and has other people critique him
mm-hmm.
and takes that feedback. And he's always watching other speakers, you know.
Yeah.
And I know I like to go to conferences and see other speakers because that's how I model things. Like yourself.
Tony works his craft. Tony works his craft, and anybody of any level, let's say on that kind of level, works his or her craft. And what you're saying is so true. I mean, give or take financial responsibilities and people's concerns, they should go to every conference where they could see speakers. Speakers who are not just speaking about the topic that they're concerned about speaking, but any topic, just to see the way they present, hear the way they present, and hear their inflections. And it's not just speakers they should see. They should watch comedians. They should watch actors. Because, I mean, to see an actor change emotion instantly, I mean, that's just amazing, and yet be credible. Well, all of a sudden, they were so happy that they got some news. And this is not true. But the actor is convincing enough that it comes across as true. So to see that and to have an emotional bank like that, to be able to shift from one to the other, but congruently, in other words, it's got to be real for you.
Right. I even tell people they should watch every once in a while things like QVC and that, to watch some of the infomercials and watch the infomercial people to see who draws you in. Because some, you know, I'll flip and I'll be watching some and it's like, nah, I just don't get into it. And then others, it's like, I'm ready to buy it, even though I know it probably really doesn't work. I'm reaching mm-hmm. for the phone.
Yeah.
You know, like my wife
bought... And what is it about that individual?
Yeah. My wife bought those push-up things, the one invented by a Navy SEAL. I think she just liked the guy's body that was demonstrating them, to be honest with you. But,
well, there you go.
Yeah, but the guy he was on that thing, he was so captivating and encouraging. And it's like, mm-hmm. yeah, you know, it's like, I'll buy those, you know? And so, I mean, I'm always looking for models like that, too. You know, anybody that can get me to want to take some kind of action.
Oh, absolutely. And that's the key. Because remember I said attention getting, of course, but the end was activating to get the group to move. And what is it about a person that gets you to move, that gets you to buy? I mean, is it because they just tie you so much that you're just so passionate and intense about moving forward on this deal, this opportunity, this product, whatever it may be? You know, and this comes from flow, because it is like a fuse where things happen, and they happen timelessly. It's magical moments are created during this.
Right.
So this is what makes a difference between somebody who pulls you in or somebody who pulls you not. It's not even them. It's something greater than them.
Mm-hmm. Well, that leads into another
question. I didn't
mean to
cut you off, Will.
I was going to ask you, is like you're teaching this and you're engaging the audience and, you know, how does the mind retain information? So when we're teaching it, is there anything we can do to make sure that people can help to retain the information and the stuff we're doing?
You know, that's something that I'm asked so many, many times in the classes. Now, certainly the things I'm teaching I've done quite a few years, naturally. However, what I think is most important is to trust. Most people do not trust themselves. And if they make a mistake, they're in critical mode immediately when they do it. And what happens is that the chatter that goes inside them is what destroys them. So, of course you know the material. I mean, that's important. You go over the material. Now, I remember, you know Elsom Eldridge, of course, mm-hmm. who's on the NGH convention conference. Elsom told me a long time ago, it was like 1988, when I was their principal trainer, 89 for NGH. He said to me, he says, George, if you want to even hone your skills even better, what you do is you talk to a tree. So George went out, actually started talking to trees. Now, the trees weren't responding. I wasn't getting any interaction. And it was scariest one time when I saw a tree actually move towards me. So I stopped doing that. But then he said, well, tape yourself. Every time I taped myself, Will, it sounded horrible. And there's no way I wanted to do the presentation. What people have to realize is that they should learn, yes. However, they have to learn and learn to forget. Because anything we've ever been exposed to is there permanently. We know that subconsciously, of course. If you allow yourself being in the flow of this information, you say, I can't believe that came out of me. I can't believe I said those words. I can't believe I remembered that. It's like people, you know, ask me, like a lot of these definitions or these long quotes that I may know. Let's say hypnosis is essentially a psychophysiological state of aroused attentive receptive focal concentration with a corresponding diminution in peripheral awareness. If I, for one moment, stopped myself and thought whether I would know that quote, there's no way it would come out. Or a lot of these long speaking quotes that are much longer than that. It's really, truly to shut off and shut off that thinking. Now, if I never read or went over anything that I was about to present, well, certainly probably might be a presentation that may have not very little value as far as that topic. So, yes, but don't get hung up on it. It's like people who do, let's say, therapeutic interactive programming or whatever, they read scripts. You've got to let go of this and go on automatic pilot and let the words flow from you. And you start finding that as you do that, words flow from you based on anything you have ever experienced and or read. And I tell you, people who do that, they start saying, you know, George, you're right. Because I think the difficulty is the essence of trust. And read some good books. There's a great book coming out, I heard, somebody told me. It's called 29 Power Steps to Delivering Electrifying Presentations. I think it should be out in the next month or the month after. 29 Power Steps to Delivering Electrifying Presentations. Who's the author, though? I can't remember the person's name. Yeah, George Bien, 29 Power Steps to Delivering Electrifying Presentations. Because that goes over a lot of things. And basically a lot of things that I went through over the years. It's not just, well, here's technique one, technique two, technique three. No. It's personal experiences and what I did to deal with them. How I got over my severe social phobia. And all these things. So, I mean, that's something to consider, too. But definitely, if one shuts down the need to be perfect, well, you know what? The person will be closer to that.
Oh, I agree. And which lead to getting closing in on an hour, but I would like to ask you about what do you consider the cornerstones of communication?
Well, the cornerstone is simply this, what you do with your eyes, what you do with your ears. See, because it's not just what you're saying, it's what you're saying, of course, but it's also hearing. It's four cornerstones of communication simply this, V-A-K-B, what you do with your eyes, the visual, what you do, because people don't follow your hands as much as they follow your eyes. I can move and make a gesture, yet look a certain way, and people will see where I'm looking before they'll see where I'm gesturing. And what you do with your voice, and of course the kinesthetic, what you do with your gestures, and B, the last one, number four, is what you do with your breathing. Now, the thing is, there's a certain level of breathing. And you know, of course, when people breathe sympathetically with you or you breathe sympathetically with them, I found that as I alter my breathing based on something that I am saying, not because I'm doing it. See, people come to me and say, listen, what technique did you use there? There is no technique. I mean, there's a lot of techniques, I know. But at the moment, a certain feeling takes over. And I will breathe according to that feeling. And I will find, especially the first few rows, will start breathing in like, in kind. And eventually that becomes catchy until I take it to another form of the fourth corner, the cornerstone, which is the breathing.
Cool.
Cool.
See, after a while, I mean, obviously, somebody, let's say, of your level, you don't think about these things. You just do them. They're part of you. And you have learned, at least over the years, to trust yourself enough that no matter who the audience is, you are going to be Will Horton, the dynamic, charismatic presenter out there, and you're going to move them. And if somebody's not ready to be moved, you may pull them a little. And that's the way I allow myself to feel also. So I do my best not to take anything personally. I mean, I've been attacked physically in presentation. This is years ago. Literally physically attacked. Maybe in another conference I will tell you about that. And how I dealt with that. So I've been through a lot of things. I definitely paid my dues in this field. And I've been challenged, oh my gosh, and frightened literally half to death, where I had to walk out of the room and get myself together before I could walk back in. I mean, this is going back quite a few years. I mean, I've been so blessed that I haven't had a challenge or a problem person in, oh, I don't know, the last 10, 12 years, maybe more.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and the interesting thing, like you say, about trust, and, you know, as everyone knows that's been around me, my training analogy is the martial arts. And they always, you know, San Chin, which is mind, no mind. You have to learn what you know until you know that you don't have to think about it.
Absolutely.
And like
learn
tonight,
to forget.
I was at class, and of course it was a Taekwondo class, but this school teaches another style of karate that I take or used to take. And so someone asked a question about that, this is, to me, a physical example of what you said. When I tried to think about how to do it, it was a kata from I couldn't think of it. So I just took a deep breath, closed my eyes, and started the first movement, and then I went through all 47 movements.
Which is a lot of movements.
Teki Shoda. And so I had to not think about it. Mm-hmm. And then it just flowed out, you know? And
that's what will happen to people when they're up there, too.
Mm-hmm.
Just what you said.
Go ahead. Sorry.
No, just what you said, basically. So once you start thinking about it, that's when it shuts it down. And here you have a kata of 47 movements. Now, these are intricate movements. And how is it that you can just do it, but when you think about it, you can't even go through it? It's the essence of stopping that inner chatter. Stopping the evaluator, stopping the critic.
Right. Well, tell the group, when is your next, do you have some trainings coming up?
Sure do. Let's see, what do I have coming up? I have the train-to-trainer coming up. There's one coming up with IACT.org. There's one coming up in California. There is, wait a second. Elena's here. She's here. Okay, I have a boot camp, Hypnosis Boot Camp, the 25th, 26th, and 27th this month in Queens, New York. I have an advanced speaking workshop coming up next month. Where is that? That's in Queens, 16th, 17th, 18th, and 19th. No, it's not. It's 16th, 17th, it's 2 days, and I have the Newport Beach, California, the 7th, 8th, 9th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th. That's a train-to-trainer for IACT, for training hypnotherapists. So those are coming up.
All right.
They can go to George BN at George BN, what am I, George BN?
George BN.
.com, that's what I am.
Yeah, everyone, and all the people on the call, if you've never had the pleasure, and I can say that honestly, of being trained and sitting through a training with George, I would highly recommend it. And I'm looking forward to his book. And when is that coming out?
Hopefully within the next 2 months. This book has been like too many years in the making.
Well, and any of us in the training, that book, because, you know, you've trained probably more people in hypnosis. I can probably only think of two other people that I would put at your level, and that would probably be Jerry Kine and Gil Boyne.
Well, that's good company, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I know you've trained more internationally than those guys.
Yeah.
So,
but they're both great trainers. And Gil Boyne's one of my mentors,
mm-hmm.
my main mentor, actually, in hypnosis.
So,
and Jerry Kine's a good friend.
Yeah, and so I think I would highly recommend that. So let's open it up. If anyone has any questions, if it's okay with you, George, you mind taking questions
sure,
from anybody? Okay.
I don't have any questions, but I'm...
So you can
iron my underwear either.
Star
George?
3, and then that'll unmute your line.
Are you there?
Yes.
Hello, yes.
Okay. In the United States last year, George, 42,800 people died in car accidents.
Okay, thank you.
I had to look it up for the book that I wrote.
I'm glad we have you here.
Well,
can we say anal retentive? Anyway.
Yeah, here's the thing.
But thank you for that.
Yeah,
that's
it's
great.
Actually what you were talking about, though.
Yeah.
We have a perception that seatbelts make us safe, that the cars are a lot safer. The perception being that with the airbags and the seatbelts and everything else, the traffic deaths have gone down. In fact, they haven't. That is,
sure.
there's no direct correlation between safety devices and prevention of death. There is between safety devices and reduction of injuries.
Hmm.
But the death
mm-hmm.
is correlated to something totally different. So
right.
our perception is of A, but in fact it's B.
Hmm.
So when you get it...
Absolutely.
It's, oh, gee, I'm talking to an audience. Oh, my God, are they going to like me? They ask you to stand up and talk. Hello. They already like you.
Right.
Otherwise, they wouldn't have asked you to come in and talk.
Right.
That's absolutely true.
So the perception is, the reality is other than the perception, and you got to get with the reality and pass on the perception side of it.
Yeah, and the reality, once you get on that bandwagon, you can change your perception then.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's so true. I'm glad you looked it up.
Yeah,
42,000.
Yep.
42,800, and I'm going to go iron my underwear now.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions for Dr. Bian? Quiet group.
Quiet group.
It's just a comment.
Oh, comments? Yes, jump in.
Okay, George, thanks very much. It's really interesting to have you speak with us. This is Carol Workman from Venice Beach, California. I'm actually, my background's in education. I have a doctorate in education. But talking to trees, your comment about talking to the trees is excellent because it's really language that puts things into memory, short-term memory. And the repetition of that language puts it into long-term memory. So if we, you ask your audience that you make a concept or an idea, then they speak it back to you. And it's the same thing. Will does so well with all his exercises. He makes people speak right away after they learn a concept. And that's the language about talking to trees.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
No, that's great. Part of that call I didn't hear because it was garbled. I don't know, Will.
Yeah. Sometimes that happens. Any other
questions?
Yeah,
I only heard the very last sentence.
What would you suggest for a person that's shy?
Yeah.
The person that's shy? Can I hear that question again?
Yeah. What type of training would you suggest for a person that's very shy?
What kind of training?
Yes, for speaking.
Well, definitely my speaking workshop, the 3-day speaking workshop. I think the next actually introductory one, which is intense, by the way, is you have to go to my website, georgebian.com, and you just look up the schedule. But I would definitely do that. But at the same time, if you're shy, I know because I was shy for years and years and years and years. One of the main things is to do as many outrageous things that you can possibly do. In other words, something that will definitely make you feel like an idiot, pardon the expression. In other words, if I went into a department store and all of a sudden sat on the floor in New York where I am, they would notice that. They may not do anything about it, but they'll notice it. Now, if I were really shy, I may not do that because I'd be thinking that people would be thinking of me. But if I could do that, well, what's the next thing I could do then? well, maybe I could go at the, let's say, the cash register when I'm purchasing a shirt or a tie, and all of a sudden start singing a song, even with my voice. Now, people may look at me really strangely. Now, if I could do that, well, guess what? I start becoming less and less shy, so I'm desensitizing myself slowly. Now, perhaps these things may seem a little too outrageous initially, so you do something less outrageous. Perhaps even walk up to a stranger and say, "Hi, how are you? Oh, I'm so sorry, I thought you were someone else." Now, that's really innocuous. Nobody's going to get upset about that. Or I say, "Hey, how you been?" And, "Oh, I'm so sorry, I thought you were someone else." But just to be able to open your mouth more, and any kind of situation that you can allow yourself to engage in where you can do something that perhaps crosses the boundary, like between individuals, because suddenly I'm invading a person's space if I say, "Hey, how are you?" And I say, "Oh, I'm so sorry, I thought you were someone else." But that softens it. You're probably not going to get punched out. Or, like I said, singing at a cash register. Or giving somebody the change, or getting the change from the cash register and dropping it on maybe on the conveyor belt, if there's a belt over there, and just saying, "Oh, wow, look at that money move. Are you seeing this?" Now, isn't that insane?
Right.
But you see, you do enough of these things. I'm capable of doing almost anything, as long as it doesn't hurt the human being. And if you have that kind of attitude and that kind of personality, this was, by the way, I was born this way, but I must have lost it because it was a tremendous shyness that I had for many years. However, at this point, I'm capable of almost anything. I will take my wife in the middle of the department store and start dancing with her, or in the middle of the supermarket and start dancing with her.
Good.
And I always answer your question. But
yeah, and I always remind
okay,
people
that.
Fun? I would just chime in with, I remind people that some of the most dynamic speakers, were, like yourself and others, were at one point very shy, and to this day, many of, if you ever watch that show, it's on Bravo, where they interview actors and singers inside the actor's mm-hmm. studio. You'll find that a lot of the elite actors, and now they also interview singers, are very shy people.
Yeah.
You know, it's you have a knowledge, you have something you're good at, and you want to get that out. So you're not alone being shy. So you,
absolutely.
It's just working through it. Good.
And here's somebody who gives powerful performances on the screen or on the stage, and yet when they're being interviewed, they kind of like are very, very withdrawn. So you're absolutely right, Will.
Oh, yeah. The one that always jumps to mind and is right there in New York. In fact, I actually saw him at a restaurant, and I didn't talk to him. He's sitting at a couple tables over. Was Robert De Niro.
Uh-huh.
You know, he's riveting on the screen, and yet he's very reserved and shy in real life.
Really? Wow. See, you wouldn't think that.
Yeah. Yeah. But okay, great. Any other questions from anyone? Okay.
No questions here.
All right. Well,
I just want to say one thing real quickly that George said. I think you said the word at least six times. Sorry, I was counting again. You keep repeating one thing that I like, and that is that you're supposed to get up there and have fun.
Yeah.
It's not a chore. It's not a task. It's not a visit to the dentist office. It's not a root canal. You're supposed to have fun.
Yeah.
And people feel it.
And that's crucial.
Well,
like you say, you can't expect them to enjoy themselves during your presentation if you're not enjoying it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's if they see you're having fun, they automatically start getting more engaged because it's compelling. Laughter is contagious. So is boredom.
So you're happy with yourself?
And and I know I always keep in mind that I've been blessed that I get to talk for a living and have fun doing it. So.
You know, Will, I tell you, there are times I just think to myself that I can't believe I'm actually getting paid for this.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I think the true thing, when somebody says, am I doing the right thing in my life, would you do it if you had all the money you ever needed and anything else your heart desired, would you still do this? And I know you, Will. And certainly for myself, I would say yes, I would still do this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was just, I kind of had one of those humbling thoughts today. I was doing something, and of course I live in Florida. It's very hot right now, and I've got a nice house, and I jumped in my swimming pool, and I was sitting there thinking, like, wow, it's pretty amazing, you know, the field I fell in love with and followed through has given me all these things, or given me the opportunity to earn them. I do know I earned them.
Yeah, well, you're a hard worker, you know, and you have a reputation for that, for giving your all to the groups. And I've seen you in action. You hold nothing back.
Hey, I'm getting that video off the market. Oh, you mean training. Okay, good.
Oh, George, Will, I'm going to be going, but I want to thank both of you. Great time, and learn some things, and I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. 42,800, right?
That's correct.
Thank you.
Cool.
Very welcome.
Okay. I'd like to thank George for joining us on our call tonight. And we're working on figuring out, downloading these, and so they'll be on the site and a podcast, and I'll get George the info so he can put it on his site. And those that haven't, I would strongly suggest you take a George BN training at your earliest convenience.
Thank you.
Thank you again.
Thank you very much, Will. Thank you, George.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Yep, and everyone have a great evening.
Take care, Will.
Take care. I thought it went great.
Thank you.